Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
America wants our land, our resources, our water, our country. Never. But these are not idle threats. President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us. That will never, ever happen.
The Liberal Party in Canada had been massively trailing in the polls. Then it pulled off a victory that seemed impossible just 2 months ago, largely thanks to one man, President Donald Trump, who repeatedly threatened to make Canada the 51st state. We'll go to Newfoundland to speak with the Canadian journalist Paris Marks. Then today is the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. We'll speak to the Pulitzer Prize-winning Vietnamese-American writer Viet Thanh Nguyen about Vietnam, Trump's first 100 days, and more.
I see the Vietnam War as just being an episode in a long history of American intervention overseas. Philippines, Korea, Japan, China, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, and Iraq and Afghanistan, and the rest of what's happening in the Middle East are really extensions of that of these policies.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Palestinian health officials say Israeli attacks have killed at least 39 people across the Gaza Strip over the past 24 hours. That includes three massive strikes on residential buildings in the Nuseirat refugee camp that survivors describe as feeling like an earthquake. Overnight, Israel continued attacks on tents and other shelters for displaced Palestinian civilians in Khan Yunis and al-Mawasi. Survivors say bodies of their loved ones were left unrecognizable by the airstrikes in an area Israel had designated as a so-called safe zone.
Do you see the rockets that fell on us and on the children at home? They were sleeping. We were sleeping deeply, only to get us out of the house like that. And we started running with the children at midnight. It is unfair and fair world.
Israel's released a jailed Gaza paramedic who survived a deadly attack on medical workers last month. Assad al-Nasasra was among at least 10 Palestinians released from an Israeli prison into Gaza Tuesday, all of them in poor physical and psychological health after they reported being tortured. Al-Nasasra was imprisoned without charge, held incommunicado for 37 days after he survived the March 23rd assault in which 15 of his fellow aid workers were killed by Israeli troops and buried in an unmarked mass grave, some of them bound and with gunshot wounds to the head and chest. Their ambulances and a fire truck were also buried nearby. President Trump signed executive orders Tuesday, rolling back his previously imposed tariffs of 25% on cars, trucks and automotive parts. Trump's reversal came as U.S. consumer confidence fell to its lowest level since the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. On Tuesday, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt responded to reports that Amazon was planning to display the cost of tariff-related price increases alongside all Amazon products.
This is a hostile and political act by Amazon. Why did Amazon do this when the Biden administration hiked inflation to the highest level in 40 years?
Amazon later said it had no plans to show the cost of tariffs on its products. Several news outlets reported the apparent reversal came after Trump personally called Amazon founder Jeff Bezos Tuesday to complain. On Capitol Hill, House Republican leaders used procedural rules Tuesday to prevent Democrats from forcing votes on measures requesting information about Elon Musk's potential conflicts of interest. The impact of DOGE's cuts on states and local communities, the Trump administration's use of the consumer messaging app Signal, and more. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson dismissed the Democrats' resolutions of inquiry as, quote, political stunts and, quote, nonsensical waste of our time, unquote. On Monday, Michigan Democratic Congressmember Shri Tanadar filed an impeachment resolution against the president, citing Trump's, quote, sweeping abuse of power, flagrant violations of the Constitution, and acts of tyranny that undermine American democracy and threaten the rule of law, unquote. The impeachment resolution will be dead on arrival in the Republican-controlled House. Meanwhile, Democratic Congressmembers Pramila Jayapal and Debbie Dingell joined Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders Tuesday in reintroducing the Medicare for All Act, which would provide universal single-payer health care based on patient needs, not industry profits.
Legislation would provide comprehensive care to all Americans, rich, poor, young or old, with zero out-of-pocket expense. It would provide full freedom of choice regarding health care providers. You go to the doctor, the nurse that you want to. No more insurance premiums, no more deductibles, no more co-payments, no more filling out endless forms.
The National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health has agreed to rehire staffers on programs benefiting firefighters after the Health and Human Services Department canceled the World Trade Center Health Program, the National Firefighter Registry for Cancer, and more. That's according to the International Association of Firefighters, whose president won the concessions after weekend talks with Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. However, the relief might be temporary, as many of the NIOSH programs still have termination dates scheduled for June. In more public health news, Mexico's reported a surge in measles cases in the border state of Chihuahua following an outbreak of the highly contagious vaccine-preventable disease in unvaccinated communities in Texas. Dr. Paul Offit, a Philadelphia pediatrician specializing in infectious diseases, says RFK Jr.'s anti-vaccine misinformation is to blame.
Held press conferences about autism. He's held press conferences about food dyes. What he should do is hold a press conference every other day about this measles epidemic and what we're doing about it and encourage vaccination, especially in areas where there's low vaccination rates. The opposite is happening. He doesn't say that. He gets in front of the public and says measles vaccine kills people every year.
In Oklahoma City, nearly two dozen federal agents raided the wrong home and forced a mother and her three daughters, who are U.S. citizens, out of their house in their underwear in the rain, seizing their phones, laptops, and even their life savings. The agents supposedly were with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the FBI, and U.S. Marshals, and had a search warrant with the names of people who did not live in the house or have any connections to the family. The women had just moved to the Oklahoma home from Maryland with her family about 2 weeks before. She spoke to KFOR Oklahoma City after the raid.
What if I would have been armed? What if you're breaking in? What am I supposed to think? My initial thought is we're being robbed. My daughter's being female daughter's being kidnapped.
Nothing but likely lifelong trauma.
We have guns pointed at our faces. Can you just reprogram yourself and see us as humans?
It is unclear agents from which department raided the home. This comes as Trump's Justice Department directed ICE to carry out raids and home searches without a warrant, invoking the centuries-old Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which has been used to target Venezuelan immigrants wrongfully accused of being in the Tren de Aragua gang. In related news, rights groups are raising alarm over reports ICE is targeting unaccompanied immigrant children in raid operations nationwide, seeking to criminally prosecute and deport them. One critic of the policy described it as backdoor family separation. A New Jersey federal judge has ruled against the Trump administration's attempts to dismiss a federal lawsuit brought by Yale Columbia University graduate Mahmoud Khalil, arguing the U.S. government's illegally detaining him for his political views. The court rejected Trump's attempts to shut down the case before even granting Khalil a hearing. Judge Michael Fabiars previously found his court could retain jurisdiction over Khalil's federal case, which could potentially impact other similar cases as Trump's State Department seeks to deport other international students and recent graduates over their support of Palestinian rights. In related news, a federal appeals court has temporarily paused the transfer of Tufts University international graduate student Ramesa Ozturk from an ICE detention center in Louisiana to Vermont. Arguments on that case are scheduled for next week. Columbia University student Palestinian activist Mohsen Mahdawi has spoken out from a Vermont prison where he's been detained since his arrest earlier this month. In an interview with Vermont Public Radio, Mahdawi quoted Dr. Martin Luther King's admonition that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
And the injustice that I am facing here and the injustice that the anti-war movement is facing is also connected to the injustice that the Palestinian people are going through. We're talking about 55,000 people who have been killed. We see children being killed, amputated, losing their parents, no homes. This is what's moving us.
A hearing in Mahdawi's case is scheduled for today, where a judge could decide whether to release him from Northwest State Correctional Facility in St. Albanstown, Vermont. Mahdawi is a green card holder from Palestine who was born and raised in a refugee camp in the West Bank. He was arrested in Vermont when he appeared for what he was told would be a naturalization test. He came to the U.S. over a decade ago and began attending Columbia University in 2021, where he became a key organizer in peaceful pro-Palestine campus protests. He headed the Columbia Buddhist Association. President Trump has fired some of former President Biden's nominees to the board that oversees the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. Among those fired is Doug Emhoff, the husband of former Vice President Kamala Harris, who was appointed to a five-year term on the board in January. In a statement, Emhoff wrote, quote, "Holocaust remembrance and education should never be politicized. To turn one of the worst atrocities in history into a wedge issue is dangerous," unquote. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth declared Tuesday he was proud to have dismantled a program that boosts the participation of women in military teams. Writing on Elon Musk's social media site X, Hegseth blasted the Pentagon's Women, Peace and Security Initiative as, quote, "a United Nations program pushed by feminists and left-wing activists. Politicians fawn over it. Troops hate it," Hegseth wrote. He said it was a Biden-era program. In fact, the program was created by a bill President Trump signed into law in 2017 that was celebrated by Trump's daughter and former advisor, Ivanka Trump. It was also supported by, at the time, Kristi Noem and now Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Renowned Colombian journalist Jeanette Bedoya, who was abducted, sexually assaulted, and tortured by paramilitaries in 2000 while she was on assignment reporting on Colombia's U.S.-backed war, has dropped her case after a quarter of a century fighting for justice. Bedoya wrote on social media, quote, "The impunity in my case will go down in Colombia's history. My work as a journalist will continue," she said. Democracy Now! Spoke to Bedoya in The Hague in 2015.
To be, go publicly and say that you've been a victim of sexual violence changes your life forever, because we live in a very machista world in which they tell you that you're guilty for your rape. But I realized that if I didn't speak, other women wouldn't be able to either. And I feel like having spoken out has changed the life for many women in Colombia.
International press freedom and human rights groups had for years pressured the Colombian government to fully investigate Bedoya's case and prosecute those involved. In 2021, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights ruled the Colombian government was responsible for Bedoya's kidnapping, rape and torture. And a senior Pakistani official says there's credible intelligence that India intends to launch a military strike on Pakistan within the next 24 hours. The warning came 1 week after gunmen massacred 26 tourists in Indian-administered Kashmir in a rampage that India blamed on Pakistan. Tensions between the two nuclear-armed countries are now at their highest point since 2019, when India carried out airstrikes inside Pakistan for the first time since 1971. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we go to Canada to look at how Donald Trump's threats helped the Liberal Party make a stunning comeback. We'll also look at Elon Musk's first 100 days. Stay with us.
As a new river flows in the night, and somewhere, honey, some old hog stomping on the bog. Like a free stream of light. My heart jumps straight. And you seem like the kind of linger there.
New River Blues by the legendary folk singer Michael Hurley, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. He died earlier this month at the age of 83. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Canada, where the Liberal parties pulled off a victory that seemed impossible just 2 months ago, largely thanks to one man, President Donald Trump, who's repeatedly threatened to make Canada the 51st state. Prime Minister Mark Carney and his Liberal Party won 169 seats out of 343 seats in Parliament, narrowly failing to win a majority of seats. Carney, who's a former central banker, has served as prime minister only in March after Justin Trudeau resigned. When Trudeau first announced his plan to resign, the Conservatives had a significant lead in the polls. It looked like Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre was set to become Canada's next prime minister. But on Monday, he suffered a major defeat. He even lost his own seat in the parliament. The campaign shifted once President Trump began threatening Canada's sovereignty and imposed new tariffs on Canada. As Trump escalated his threats, the Liberal Party soared in popularity. This is Prime Minister Mark Carney speaking at a victory rally Monday night.
America wants our land, our resources, our water, our country. Never. But these are not idle threats. President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us. That will never, ever happen. Our old relationship with the United States, a relationship based on steadily increasing integration, is over. The system of open global trade, anchored by the United States, a system that Canada has relied on since the Second World War, a system that, while not perfect, has helped deliver prosperity for a country for decades, is over. These are tragedies. But it's also our new reality. We are over. We are over the shock of the American betrayal. But we should never forget the lessons.
But you're going to take us forward.
We have to look out for ourselves.
Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney speaking at his victory event. President Trump called Carney on Tuesday to congratulate him. Meanwhile, White House Deputy Press Secretary Anna Kelly said the election does not affect President Trump's plan to make Canada America's cherished 51st state, unquote. On Monday night, the Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre pledged to work with the Liberal Party.
Conservatives will work with the Prime Minister and all parties with the common goal of defending Canada's interests and getting a new trade deal that puts these tariffs behind us while protecting our sovereignty and the Canadian people.
While the Liberal Party in Canada pulled off what's been described as a stunning comeback, support for the left-leaning New Democratic Party, or NDP, collapsed. The party lost official party status. The party's leader, Jagmeet Singh, lost his own seat. To talk more about the Canadian elections and U.S.-Canada relations, we'll then talk with him about Elon Musk. We're going to St. John's, Newfoundland, where we're joined by the journalist Paris Marks. He hosts the podcast Tech Won't Save Us and writes the Disconnect newsletter, where his latest article is headlined Canada's Tech Executives Aren't Scared of Mark Carney. Paris, thanks so much for being with us. Why don't you start off on the surprising Canadian victory, not surprising from this election, but from a month before. The harder President Trump went after Canada, the more the Liberal Party rose in the polls until ultimately the Prime Minister was elected.
Yeah, it's great to join you this morning. It was really a stunning turnaround over the past few months. If you'd asked people, you know, around Christmas, if the Liberal Party had any chance of forming government in the next election, they would have said, absolutely not. It's not happening. But now we see Mark Carney is poised to form a minority government, but it's a strong minority government. You know, he's only three seats away from a majority, so that won't be very difficult to govern with. Whereas the Conservative Party has still increased, actually, their vote share and their number of seats. But the leader, as you said in your opening, you know, lost his seat, and, you know, it's still unclear what exactly he is going to do to try to gain representation or if the party is going to try to get rid of him. And I think one of the biggest stories of the election is, as you said, you know, the real decimation of the smaller parties, whether it's the New Democratic Party on the center left, which has been reduced to just seven seats, which is below the line for official party status in Canada, which means that it won't get many resources, will have limited questions, things like that in parliament, but also the Bloc Québécois, which saw its number of seats drop by 10, and the Green Party, which saw its number of seats drop from 2 to 1. And a lot of that vote went to the Liberal Party because people felt, seeing what was happening with Donald Trump and the threats that he was making against Canada, that this was not a time to allow the Conservative Party, and especially a Conservative Party leader that was using some of that Trumpian language, to, you know, be the one who kind of represents us in these negotiations with the United States. And, you know, in this moment where it looks like Canada is going to have a difficult task of, you know, rethinking kind of the status quo that the economy was built on for the past several decades.
And Paris, could you talk more about the impact that the Trump tariffs and the Trump threats to make Canada a 51st state have had on the Canadian population?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been huge, right? People in Canada feel really betrayed and really angry about what is happening because, you know, the United States is the country and Americans are the people who we arguably have the closest relationship to in the world, right? You know, we consume so much of the same culture. There's so many kind of relatives and friends that live on both sides of the border. And so this real kind of shift from the American administration to really be targeting Canada has really affected a lot of Canadians and how a lot of Canadians feel about the United States as well. And that, you know, as you said in your opening, that is part of what contributed to this election victory. Of course, Justin Trudeau, the old prime minister, stepped aside as Liberal leader just a couple weeks before Donald Trump was inaugurated in January. And that opened the way for a new leader to come in to really, you know, be a representation of this anger and of the public mood. And Mark Carney sees that very effectively and kind of allowed Canadians to rally around the Liberal Party again, to represent the kind of nationalism that people are feeling in this moment in response to, you know, the trade war that has been begun by Donald Trump and seems to be targeted very specifically on Canada more than many other countries in the world, of course, Mexico as well. And, you know, so that has been very significant. And there's a lot of Canadians now who say that, yeah, we might have a difficult time ahead in dealing with the United States, but we're ready to accept some economic pain, you know, in order to push back and kind of defend our interests.
Now, you've posted on social media that most of Canada's top tech executives turned against the Liberals and were betting that the Conservatives would win, but that they don't have much to fear now under a Carney as the nation's new leader.
Yeah, exactly. So around this time last year, the Liberal Party under Justin Trudeau put out its annual budget. And in that budget was a proposal to increase the amount of taxes that people have to pay on capital gains. Now, that would only affect 0.13% of Canadians, these increases that were proposed. But as you can imagine, people in the tech industry are disproportionately likely to earn income through capital gains. And they got very angry as a result of that. So, you know, kind of a worsening relationship between, you know, large tech executives in Canada and the Liberal Party came out into the open at that moment. And there was a real embrace of the Conservative Party. Over the past year, we have seen, you know, a number of Canadian tech executives embrace more right-wing policy positions. The industry has come together to create an organization called Build Canada to advocate for some of those positions. And even since Trump came to office, we saw some of those people, you know, making explicit arguments that Canada should have its own doge, you know, with all the consequences that, of course, we've seen in the United States as a result of that agency and Elon Musk's leadership of it. And so, you know, now you would imagine that with the Liberals returning to power that, you know, there would probably be a pretty bad relationship between those tech executives and the Liberal Party. But actually, Mark Carney, one of his first actions as prime minister was to remove that increase in the capital gains tax. And he's been talking a lot about investing in artificial intelligence, investing in the tech industry, rolling out AI in the public sector to increase efficiency. So even though we have a Liberal Party coming to power over a Conservative Party, that doesn't mean there aren't things to still be worried about as we see the way that they might potentially govern in the years ahead.
And talk about how unusual Mark Carney is, not a politician, but a central banker, and what that means.
Yeah, it's very significant, right? And I think we're still at the moment where Canadians are really discovering who Mark Carney actually is. You know, he does not have a political career. He previously worked at Goldman Sachs before serving as the head of the Bank of Canada during the financial crisis in 2008. And then he served as head of the Bank of England in, you know, during the Brexit crisis. And through that period, he was the first Canadian to head as to serve as head of the Bank of England. Beyond that, he has worked at a company called Brookfield Asset Management. And there has been some controversy around that with, you know, the kind of tax maneuvers and tax dealings that it has had that kind of played out during the election, but that people don't seem to have really, you know, focused too much on when it came to thinking about their vote. I would say the big thing about Mark Carney right now is he is still very new to Canadians, right? He was only prime minister for, I believe, 9 days before calling the election. And so a lot of people were kind of able to put their hopes into Mark Carney, you know, regardless of where he actually stands. And now we're in this moment where he is actually going to prove that he can follow through on the promises that he made. And so now he enters a much more difficult period than he had over the past, you know, 5 or 6 weeks, you know, as he began as prime minister and then ran this, you know, very short election campaign. Because as you'll know, our elections in Canada are a lot quicker than the ones that happen in the United States.
Paris Marks, I also want to ask you about Elon Musk, who you have reported on extensively. As President Trump marked his 100th day in office, the New York Times front page headline, "There have never been 100 days like this." I want to ask you about the role of Elon Musk, the world's richest man in Washington, over these 100 days. A new Senate report finds Musk and his businesses could avoid over $2 billion in potential legal liability thanks to cuts Musk enacted as head of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. When Trump was inaugurated, Musk was facing up to 65 actions from 11 federal agencies targeting SpaceX, Tesla, Neuralink, and XAI. Senate Democrats now say Musk has largely averted those actions thanks to DOGE helping him, quote, evade oversight, derail investigations, and make litigation disappear whenever he so chooses on his terms and at his command. Paris Marks, tell us more.
Yeah, it has been a really stunning 100 days. And even the period before that, right? Before Trump came to power, was reelected, you could see that Elon Musk was already making the shift to the right globally, you know, by supporting other extreme right wing parties. And then, of course, to get publicly behind Donald Trump, to give hundreds of millions of dollars to support his campaign. But I think even then, it was hard to imagine that he would really play this outsized role in, you know, the actual governance of the country, right? Heading up this agency that seemed to have such broad power to start, you know, going into these various different departments and agencies of the U.S. government, remaking it, laying people off, you know, forcing decisions on it. And what we have seen as part of that is, you know, this ability for Elon Musk to use this kind of profile that he has as, you know, this tech leader, this tech genius, regardless of whether that's true or not, to come in and kind of help legitimize this right-wing program that we had seen in the making for quite some time, right? Through Project 2025 and, you know, the larger kind of Heritage Foundation and these other right-wing groups and their ambitions. But then beyond that, you know, as you were saying there,